Welcome to Commons and Chronicles, the podcast where we talk about all the best Creative Commons and reusable open game license content. If you need resources for your creative writing, game design, or you just love lore, Commons and Chronicles is for you. Conan the Barbarian. I think he is arguably one of the most misunderstood characters in fiction. Largely because I think of his expanded universe. You probably know Conan the Barbarian by name, at least, but you might be unfamiliar with Conan the Barbarian, the actual character, and the world and the stories. So I'll give you a little bit of history about him. Conan the Barbarian originated in some magazine stories written by Robert E. Howard. The stories were periodical in old pulp sci-fi and fantasy magazines, and it wasn't a very premeditated affair. I mean, Robert E. Howard wrote these stories about this character, Conan the Barbarian, and really played around with time and setting, and didn't necessarily attempt to deliver to people a chronological account of Conan the Barbarian's life. And as such, the stories, one story from 2 months ago may feature Conan in his relative middle age. And then the next story features Conan in his youth, when he barely knows how to fight yet, and so on. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag if you go and read them as they were released. And other people have come after Robert E. Howard and sort of looked at the stories and attempted to place them in some kind of chronological order so that we might know what the proper, quote-unquote, way to read the stories are, and so on. And when Robert E. Howard died, authors followed up, took over the Conan the Barbarian mythos, and created what we would call today an expanded universe for him. And so there are actually quite a lot of books and comic books and, of course, movies featuring Conan the Barbarian, the character. I have no interest in the expanded universe. I've read several times the original 20 or so stories by Robert E. Howard, enjoyed them thoroughly, and that's the Conan that I want to talk about, because to me that's the canonical Conan, the one that was created and written by Robert E. Howard himself. And as such, I think it's one of the most important things to note about Conan, the character, is that he's not actually that much of a barbarian as you and I probably imagine a barbarian. The term barbarian nowadays is sort of a derogatory term. We use it to suggest that someone is a brute, sort of a thoughtless, mindless meathead who goes around in the context of a fantasy world clobbering people. That's not Conan at all. Conan's actually a very thoughtful, intelligent rogue, to be honest, especially if we're talking about Dungeons & Dragons classifications. He's really basically a rogue. He's a swashbuckler to the point that he's actually served on pirate ships and even been a captain of a pirate crew. So he's very much a swashbuckling thief who prowls around old temples and tombs to gather wealth. At the same time, he must have multi-classed at some point, because he's also quite a good fighter. He's not afraid to be a frontline fighter and go in there and lead the charge and take on multiple men at once. So he does live up to the sort of the barbarian cliche in terms of fighting ability. But he's not at all the big dumb brute who just goes around clobbering people, as some of the expanded universe content, the movies and so on, portray him to be. And regardless of how scattered the order of publication of Robert E. Howard's stories were, Robert E. Howard very much kept a consistent world in which Conan lived and adventured. In fact, it's so consistent that Robert E. Howard wrote and published an essay called The Hyborian Age. The Hyborian Age is the fictional time period during which Conan lived. And this essay details the world of Conan from what's called the pre-cataclysmic period, which is mostly prehistoric. There's not a whole lot of records of the pre-cataclysm, and that during that time the Atlantis would have existed, and races that have been subdued during Conan's life were at the top of their game, and so on. So it it chronicles the pre-cataclysmic period a little bit, and then goes into great detail about the changing face of the world and the civilizations within it, and the continents and the islands, and just kind of the structure of where Conan lived and adventured. The problem with the essay, in my mind, is, well, first of all, it's quite dry. As great as it is to have a blueprint of this fantasy world, I have got to admit, it is very dry, and it's structured as just a prose essay, so there's no sense of a timeline or a map in a visual or graphical sense. It's all just written out, and you would have to sort of pick through it and construct, kind of transcribe what it's telling you to, I think, to make a whole lot of sense of it. It's clear, it's just, it is very matter of fact, and Robert E. Howard's intent was simply to record the facts of this fictional world, which he then based all of the Conan stories in. So it's not really about Conan, and it's not about necessarily any characters that you will encounter in Conan stories, but it is about all of the civilizations and the kingdoms and what state each one of them are in at any given time. So it's an interesting read if you're really into the Hyborian Age, and conveniently I've recorded that book for LibriVox.org. If you go to LibriVox, LibriVox.org, and do a search for The Hyborian Age, you'll find it read by Klaatu. You can download it for free and listen to it. It's about an hour long. As I said, it's pretty dry, but it is quite complete. Across a few episodes of this show, I want to deconstruct the Hyborian Age, not the essay, but all 20 stories of Conan the Barbarian. And I don't mean deconstruct it in the fictional plot sense. I just want, I have extracted information from the 20 stories and compiled them into snapshots of different regions and different aspects of Conan's world. So the first place we're going to visit is called Stygia. Stygia is sort of it's the evil region. And I'm not starting with it for any other reason than it's as good as any other region to start in. It tends to be something that underlies many of the stories, not all of them, but many of the stories have a certain undertone of at least the knowledge that some ancient evil from Stygia is invading a kingdom or some aspect of life. Stygia itself is, by the time Conan lived, is somewhat reduced in size. The Stygian borders had once marched with those of ancient Acheron, but Acheron had fallen and the barbaric ancestors of the Hyborians had swept southward in wolf skins and helmets, driving the ancient rulers of Stygia before them. The Stygians had not forgotten. So they're not happy with being a reduced kingdom, in other words. They would much rather be a larger kingdom. Prior to having been reduced in size to just their immediate territory, they had stretched, the Stygian Empire had stretched far north of the River Styx, S-T-Y-X, not the same River Styx that you might know from Greek myths, of course, beyond the meadowlands of Shem and into the fertile uplands now inhabited by the peoples of Koth and Ophir and Argos. Some of those we'll hear again in future episodes. Stygia is a land of shadow-guarded tombs. It is the home of Set, the god Set, and who you may recognize from the Egyptian pantheon episode. And it is when Conan is alive, Stygia is ruled by King Ctesiphon. That's Ctesiphon. That's the best I can do to pronounce that one. So the Styx River is a major geological feature of the region. The Styx River springs from some nameless source far in the unknown lands, far, far south of Stygia. But it runs northward for thousands of miles before it turns and flows westward for some hundreds of miles to empty at last into the ocean. Now, if you keep going west, you'll run into some islands, a group of islands that survived the Great Cataclysm. But we won't go all the way out there because that's not Stygia. I'm just trying to give you a picture of of what's around. So to the north is Shem and Koth and Ophir and Argos. To the west is the ocean and a bunch of islands that have a lot of different civilizations on it that we'll talk about in future episodes. To the east is Turin, T-U-R-A-N, which is a Hyrcanian kingdom, which we will definitely talk about in a future episode because it's quite a major kingdom. So Stygia is a pretty mysterious region, and it is known that the god Set is the primary god. Now, there are some other gods that have made inroads in Stygia, but Set is still the main god of the region. In fact, in some parts of Stygia, it's forbidden to slay a serpent, because serpents are considered the sacred sons of Set. There are also rumored to be demon-haunted crypts below the black giant-walled temple of Set, located in the hinterlands of Stygia. There are a couple of different cities in Stygia worth mentioning. The first is Chemi, K-H-E-M-I. It is Stygia's greatest port city, and probably during Conan's life the most important city in Stygia, not only because it's a port city, but also because the priestcraft reigns in Chemi. Men say that the center of their dark religion lays far inland in the mysterious deserted city near the bank of the Styx, but it's most active here in Chemi. In Chemi, the Styx River empties out into the ocean, so you have a great port, but one that is well fortified. There are massive black castles along the shore, and generally ships do not put unasked into this port. It has a reputation for being home to sorcerers who weave awful spells in the murk of sacrificial smoke, mounting eternally from blood-stained altars where naked women scream, and where Set, the old serpent, archdemon of the Hyborians, but god of the Stygians, is said to writhe his shining coils among his worshippers. In the dreamy glass-floored bay, you sometimes see a serpent-proud gondola shoot from behind a castellated point of land, with naked women wearing great red blossoms in their hair, standing and calling to sailors, posing and posturing brazenly. So Chemi is a pretty wild place, and it's probably exactly the kind of city you would want to sneak into and find all kinds of conspiracies happening. Another city is known as Kuthchemes, K-U-T-H-C-H-E-M-E-S. It's a collection of ruins near Stygia, in a desert or near a desert. It was once ruled by the sorcerer Thugra Khotan about 3,000 years before Conan's time. Thugra Khotan is an important figure in one of the books from Conan, so we'll learn a little bit more about him later in this episode. Another city that we should talk about is Zamboula. Zamboula is an exotic, hybrid, flamboyant, and clamorous city. It's host of the Swordmaker's Bazaar. It was built by Stygians long ago, but was won or stolen by the Hyrcanians. The Hyrcanians, remember, is the culture to the east of Stygia, in what is now known as the Kingdom of Turan. It's a very multicultural city. It's host to many religions, including Set worship, but it's quite the melting pot. So much so, in fact, that there's even a cannibalistic cult that hangs out there, so adventurers beware. The Stygians built it into a city and settled it with their own people, and with Shemite and Cushite slaves. The ceaseless caravans threading the desert from east to west and back again brought riches and more mingling of races. Then came the conquering Turanians, riding out of the east to thrust back the boundaries of Stygia, and now for a generation Zamboula has been Turan's westernmost outpost, ruled by the Turanian satrap. That's a quote from one of the books. So another city that we don't have a whole lot of information on, but it's something that is worth noting because the king of Stygia dwells there, is Luxor, or Luxur. L-U-X-U-R. It's an ancient city of Stygia. It's been around forever. The king resides there, so it's important to know about. And one more city that we have a little bit of just a one-liner of information on is Sukhmet, S-U-K-H-M-E-T. It's a border town in Stygia, not far from Darfar, which is in Turan. And then last but certainly not least is the ghost city of Zarkheba. It's Z-A-R-K-H-E-B-A. As its moniker implies, it's an abandoned city, it's an ancient city. It's located deep in a jungle along the Zarqiba River, so the actual name of the city is not known. The region was populated by sort of an angelic race, and this is well before Stygia was even a civilization, so this is way back in time. Earthquakes and shifts in the land, possibly the cataclysm itself, ruined the region and perverted its people, who turned from angelic to demonic, and soon died out from cannibalism and infighting. So here's what the book itself has to say about the city, the description. It was but the ghost of a city on which they looked, when they cleared a jutting, jungle-clad point and swung in toward the incurving shore. Weeds and rank river grass grew between the stones of broken piers and shattered paves that had once been streets and spacious plazas and broad courts. From all sides, except that toward the river, the jungle crept in, masking fallen columns and crumbling mounds with poisonous green. Here and there, buckling towers reeled drunkenly against the morning sky, and broken pillars jutted up among the decaying walls. Now, in the relative center of this ghost city, there's a great marble pyramid, spired by a slim column, upon which perches what you might think from a distance is a statue. Maybe it looks like a bit like a gargoyle, but whatever that is, it actually flies away when Conan and his band of adventurers approach. So it's alive, and that's all I'll say. The center altar of this pyramid is stained with blood, and it contains diamonds and rubies and bloodstones and sapphires, turquoises, moonstones, opals, emeralds, amethyst, and several unknown gems. So it's you strike it rich if you find this thing. And that's the ghost city of Zarqiba. In my D&D campaigns where I use this, I usually have the prehistoric civilization be populated by essentially Aesimar, and I have generally the Aesimar coming back to fight their prehistoric foes, you know, the corrupted Aesimar, so some kind of undead demon creature, and the adventurers get to help. However you spin it, it's a great forgotten jungle city that you can do a lot of stuff with. There's all kinds of possibilities, so that's a fun one. Let's talk a little bit about the people of Stygia, or those that we know of. The big one, I guess, is Thugra Khotan, who was mentioned when I was talking about the ruined city Kuthchemiz. He was once the ruler of this region of Kuthchemiz. He's been dead for 3,000 years by the time Conan is alive, but he willfully drank poison and was laid to rest in a tomb of his own design, which kept him safe and preserved perfectly for 3,000 years until he was awakened by a guy named Shavates, a Zamorin thief. He is the leader, as it turns out, of a cult called the Zugite cult, which actually is a cult of Set. So he worships Set, but he has formed his own division of Set worship called the Zugite cult. He calls himself Natok when he poses as a prophet for the nomadic nations of the modern day, modern being Conan's day. He leads them into battle against the North. Another ancient inhabitant of Stygia that shows up in the modern Conan day is one Princess Akivasha. Princess Akivasha is a Stygian vampire living in a temple of Set. She is, of course, a beautiful but ancient evil whose name still lives the world over in both song and legend. How old is she exactly? 10,000 years. 10,000 years since Akivasha, who was the daughter of Tuthamon, had reveled in feasts amid the black halls of ancient Luxor. Her only sin was that she loved life, but she loved it a lot. But maybe she loved it a little bit too much, because she was very much afraid of death. She didn't want to die. Well, she didn't want to grow old. She didn't want to grow ugly and old, and she didn't really want to die. So she just wanted to stay young and alive and so on. So she wooed darkness like a lover, and his gift was life that, not being life as mortals know it, can never grow old or fade. She became a vampire. She went into the shadows to cheat age and death, and she now lives in a temple of Set, and whenever she has the chance to appeal to someone who might sustain her further, she does so. So watch out for her. She's very nice. She's really, really nice. It's just that she will kill you. So someone less ancient and arguably less evil is Prince Kutamon. He is the rebel prince of Stygia. He allied himself with Natok, who is Thugra Khotan, of course, in an attempt to conquer northern Hyborian lands. Another ancient evil from Stygia, there are a lot of ancient evils from Stygia, is Xaltotun of Python. He is a high priest of Set, actually from ancient Acheron. He died in his home in Kemi, in Stygia, but was resurrected by Orastes with the heart of Ahriman, a magical gemstone in the waning of the Year of the Lion, which was about 3,000 years after the fall of Acheron. According to Hadrathus, a priest of Asura, the wizards of Acheron practiced foul necromancy, thaumaturgy of the most evil kind, grisly magic taught them by devils, and of all the sorcerers of that accursed kingdom, none was so great as Xaltotun of Python. Now, to be fair, not all evil people from Stygia are ancient and undead or resurrected. Nope, there's a modern one. His name is Thoth-Amon, Thoth-Amon. He's a Stygian sorcerer and worshipper of Set. He once owned the Serpent Ring of Set, which he discovered in an ancient, ancient tomb almost a league beneath the surface of the earth. Thoth-Amon is technically the master of all priests of Set, because he is the priest who lives in Luxor, which is, of course, the capital city. It's the king's city in Stygia. There's an important faction in Stygia. It's the Wizards of the Black Ring. It's called the Nadir of Evil. These wizards voluntarily seek the scarlet nightmares of the Black Lotus to revive their necromantic powers. The Black Ring is a fable and a lie to most folk of the Western world, but Conan knows of its ghastly reality and its grim votaries who practice their abominable sorceries amid the black vaults of Stygia and the knighted domes of accursed Sabbatia. We don't know a whole lot about this faction, except what I've just told you. I think there's plenty to work with there. I mean, if you need a dark circle of wizards, there you go. There they are. The Black Lotus is a magical or powerful plant that comes up quite often in the Conan stories, so we'll definitely cover all of its different abilities later on. And now let's talk a little bit about the gods that are in Stygia. The first and foremost, obviously, is Set. So I'll skip over Set for a moment. There are a couple of different gods that have gotten into Stygia successfully. So two of them are Dagon and Derketo. I'm not 100% sure. I wouldn't swear to the fact that these are gods. They could just be locations. But when I read about them, I got the feeling that they were talking about gods, and that they have a presence in Stygia. That's all I can say about that, because that's really all I got, is the fact that there are two words, Dagon and Derketo, and possibly their gods. So that's possibly some small worshippers there, or a small number of worshippers. Another one is Mitra. You're going to hear a lot about Mitra. Mitra is the lawful good god of Conan's world. I don't want to go too far into Mitra right now in Stygia, because Mitra really doesn't belong in Stygia. But you should know that some Stygians worship Mitra. But then again, that can be said for almost every region in the Hyborian Age. It's Mitra is an evangelical religion. It marches in, it takes over, it supplants the current religion with Mitra worship, and that's kind of how they go. So the fact that there are Mitra worshippers in Stygia is not all that surprising. Is Mitra at all related to Mistra, the famous neutral goddess of the D&D worlds? Probably not. I don't know, but I doubt it. Mistra is a goddess. She's lawful neutral, I think. And Mitra is a god, and he's... I get the feeling that he's supposed to be lawful good. Or at least I think his followers would claim that he was lawful good. Maybe he's lawful neutral. either way, I don't know that there's a relationship between that, those two gods, other than the names sound similar. Was D&D influenced at all by Conan? Most definitely. Another important god that has a little bit of a presence in Stygia is Ishtar. Ishtar is actually more associated with the East, so it's more of a Hyrcanian god. But since Stygia and the Hyrcanians kind of, well, they certainly, the kingdom of Turin and Stygia border one another, so we can assume that Ishtar probably crosses that border from time to time. There's a pretty good account of how an Ishtar worshiper treats and expects religion to be. So I will save a lot of that for an episode maybe on the gods of the Conan world. I don't want to go too far into it. I just want to mention so far Dagon and Derketo, Mitra, Ishtar, and then Asura is an interesting god or goddess, I'm not sure which, that has some support in Stygia. Asura is interesting because many people say that the cult of Asura is actually a vestigial branch of Set worship in Stygia. But the fact that the followers of Asura came from Vindhya, beyond the Sea of Vilayet, and the Blue Himalayan Mountains, it's probably more of an Eastern, not Southern religion. And yet, that's the claim. People believe that Asura quite possibly is based on Set worship from long ago. And that brings us to Set. So Set, if you go back and listen to the Egyptian mythology episode, then you'll hear all about Seth, the Egyptian god of maybe chaos, maybe not, kind of depends on your interpretation. The Conan god Set is a serpent god. He is the god of the sorcerer Thoth-Amon. He's the god of Stygia, really. He's the official god of the region of Stygia. His symbols include, of course, a serpent, specifically a scaled serpent coiled with its tail in its mouth, but any serpent will do in a pinch. There's also the imprint of a black hand, thumb and four fingers plainly distinct. That's another symbol of Set. Set was regularly offered human sacrifice by the Stygians. That's something that is expected. It's not super clear as to whether it's official now in Conan's time, but there's definitely the implication that it is still done. Not too sure if it's done every week when you go to Set worship, but it's something that's definitely happening, even if sort of within the more extreme cults. We're not super clear on that. Set is either one of the nameless old ones, or he may be in some way related somehow to them. He has a ring of power that predates mankind, so he is said to be an archdemon to some, and then a god to others. He also has an arch-nemesis. There was a man named Epimetrius the Sage, dead by Conan's time, dead for 1500 years. But his body lies in the black heart of Golamira, and it is said that he sends forth his ghost on unseen wings to aid Aquilonia, which is a kingdom that Conan eventually sort of takes charge of in times of need. Ages ago, when Set coiled around the world like a python about its prey, Epimetrius fought him. He drove Set into the shadows of the mysterious south. Of course, in dark Stygia, men still worship Set. And today, Epimetrius still protects the world against Set and his worshippers and votaries and acolytes. His symbol is a phoenix, and he inscribes it as a rune as a way of blessing weapons. So that's Epimetrius the Sage. Speaking of blessing weapons, that happens fairly frequently in the Conan universe. So if you want to level up your weapons, There's a precedence for that within Conan the Barbarian. There are also some important magical artifacts. Of course, we've already talked about the ring that Thoth-Amon owns, the serpent ring of Set, which again predates humanity. It's that old, and it was buried when he found it in a cavern, literally a league beneath the earth. But there are other things. So one of the things that you might find in Stygia is an iron chest. Doesn't seem all that important, but it was forged in unholy fires among the flaming mountains of Krasha. Now, the fun thing about this little iron chest is that it is trapped. It's booby-trapped, of course. It's Conan the Barbarian. This is Dungeons and Dragons before Dungeons and Dragons. Of course the thing is trapped. So there are seven skulls around the rim of this iron chest, And if you press each skull one after the other, and then press the head of the dragon that writhes across the lid, then you press the sphere in the dragon's claws. This sequence releases a secret catch, and in so doing, the user's finger is pricked by a needle sharp as a dragon's claw, and it's steeped in venom of the black Stygian scorpion. Death within seconds. So that sort of device in the Conan world is very common. It is as common in the Hyborian Age as it is in your D&D campaign. There's also something called a Ganta knife. This is non-magical, but it's something that I thought bore mention. It's a weapon borne by the fierce desert men who dwelt in the south of Stygia, a broad, heavy, slightly curved blade of fine steel, edged like a razor and long enough to dismember a man. So it's a formidable knife, basically a short sword, I would say, and very, very sharp. So it could be a good item to give out to your players. And then, of course, there is, as I've said a couple of times now, the Serpent Ring of Set. It's made of a metal-like copper. It's shaped in the form of a scaled serpent, curled in three loops with its tail in its mouth. Its eyes are yellow gems that glitter balefully. It is not said what exactly the Serpent Ring of Set grants the user or the wearer, so you'd have to kind of come up with that on your own. I imagine it, the way that I have played it in the past with some success, is that it grants an extra spell slot. Like your highest rank, you get one extra spell slot. I don't know, maybe that's OP, maybe that's a little bit too much for you, I'm not sure. It works for me, but to be honest, they've been in one-off campaigns every single time, so I don't know how that would bear out across a long campaign. Although it should be mentioned and stressed that the Serpent Ring of Set is much sought after. It is, it's a powerful device, but kind of like, I guess, the ring in Lord of the Rings, it is something that lots of people want. In fact, even Thoth Amon, the man who found the Stygian sorcerer who found the ring from this ancient tomb, had it stolen from him by a Shemetish thief, and it sends his life into a tailspin. After the ring is stolen from him, all of his power is broken. He has no magic anymore, and in fact, rival magicians rise up to slay him. He flees. He has to disguise himself as a common camel driver. He travels in a caravan in the land of Koth, and a bunch of raiders fall upon him. Everyone in the caravan is slain except for him, and in the end, he saves his life only by revealing his identity to the leader of the raiders and swearing to serve him. So he becomes a servant, really, to a bunch of desert raiders in the end, and that's all sort of as a fallout from having lost this ancient Serpent Ring of Set. So if a player does find this thing, first of all, it would certainly be evil aligned, or at least chaotic aligned. And second of all, it would be something that people would want. Other people who know about the ring would absolutely want to get a hold of it. Possibly the Wizards of the Black Ring themselves, the Nadir of Evil, the faction in Stygia of all the Scarlet Nightmares of the Black Lotus necromantic wizards. That's everything I have on Stygia. Hopefully I've painted a picture that gets across this region, this dark region of the world. It's an ancient place. It is probably home to Nyarlathotep. It is an ancient and evil place with lots and lots of things to explore. I would love to go to Stygia as a D&D party. I've DM'd adventures in Stygia. I've never actually been there as a player. I think it's a great place, though. It is almost, in a way, I would say it's almost my default setting half the time. It is one of those places that I draw from all the time. Practically every dungeon that I run has some tie-in to something from Stygia or something from Seth in ancient Egypt. So it's a really fun place to visit because it's just full of evil things that are left over from pre-cataclysmic days that you just have to look out for. And they might be wealthy, might make you rich, or they might cause you to, I don't know, decay and lose an arm or something. So that's Stygia. On a related note, and this is only vaguely related, but I feel like it's worth mentioning, there is a work on DMsGuild.com called, well, it's part of a series called the Plane Shift series. And this is done by, well, it's put out by Wizards of the Coast. And it is a combination of Magic the Gathering settings combined or outlined rather for Dungeons and Dragons settings. It's by James Wyatt. So James Wyatt has been around for a long time and he's worked on a lot of things for Dungeons and Dragons. And these are really, really well done. And the reason I'm mentioning this at all is because there is a plane shift for the setting of Amonkhet, which if you follow Magic the Gathering at all, then you'll know that Amonkhet is sort of the Magic the Gathering version of Egypt or Stygia or whatever you choose to call it. So that might be worth checking out just for sort of additional fodder for your campaigns. Certainly a good read. It's not Creative Commons or anything, but I figured I'd mention it because it kind of ties in vaguely to Stygia. And then last but hopefully not least, I have a contest. So if you are listening to this episode, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. Remember, this episode is current as of September 3, 2018. But you can email me, and if you are the first to email me, then I have a Humble Bundle key to give you. Follow the link for a download of, oh, I don't know, probably 12 or 15 or 10 RPG books by a company called Frog God Games. Frog God Games is, I think it got merged or is another name for Necromancy Games, which is kind of a, I guess you could call it an old school gaming company. I don't know if that's really the appropriate term, but they've been around for a while anyway, and they do all kinds of different RPG products. They're open game license, meaning that you can obviously use the mechanics and the things that you find within the books. You can't necessarily then use the terminology, the same names and so on. It kind of depends on product per product. But it's worth looking at, and the reason that I'm associating it with this episode is because a lot of their adventures in this Humble Bundle pack somehow vaguely relate, at least in my mind, to Conan the Barbarian, especially the Northlands Saga, which is kind of a full adventure path, really. It takes your characters from level 1 all the way up to, I don't know, 8 or 9, I think, and it's set in the icy, wintry north where barbarians rule. So there's a little bit of Conan-ish adventure there. Not necessarily straight out of Conan or anything like that, but it kind of rang familiar to me. The bundle is quite good. If you're listening to this on the day of release, then you still have actually 9 days to go get it yourself. It's not that much. I've got the $8 tier to give away to one person who emails me. So do shoot me an email. I will send you the link for these downloads. There's a lot of good stuff there. You've got a Book of Lost Spells. There's something like 100 spells in there for different domains. That's always fun. I mean, the Pathfinder core rulebook and the D&D handbook have lots of spells, and they're a lot of fun, and getting to know those spells is important and useful. But when you have, I don't know, 100 more to choose from, I mean, who's going to complain about that? There are also a series of adventures called one-night stands, so they're meant to be one or two nights of RPG play, so nothing too big to commit to or anything. It's just kind of a small piecemeal adventures, but I guess the real star of the download that I'm offering are the Northlands Saga and the Northlands series. Lots of adventures set in the Northlands. That said, there are 4 other settings books that are quite good. There's the Marshes of Malice, the Mountains of Madness, the Fields of Blood, and the Dunes of Desolation. It's at least a, I don't know, 100, 200 pages each of descriptions of these environments, and then a couple of adventures thrown in, set in those environments to give you kind of an idea of how they would play out. So there's a lot of information, a lot of cool ideas to be had, and all you have to do is email me, let me know that you want it, and I'll send you the key. If you miss that offer, shoot me an email anyway. I generally overpurchase Humble Bundles that are RPG related, so a lot of times I have several copies of RPG downloads that I've legitimately purchased, you know, for a dollar or something, and I'm eager to give away copies of things that I have redundant copies of. Now, these are PDFs, so technically, of course, I could just give it out infinitely, but I'm not going to do that because that's not what the publisher has requested, obviously. It's given in good faith. So if you email me and you've missed the Humble Bundle key that I'm giving out in this episode, there will be more in the future, but even before I get to those other contests, I've got single copies of PDFs that I know that I have purchased more than once, and so I'm happy to send a PDF to you, and then I'll delete it off of my hard drive, and I expect that you will honor the publisher's wishes and not redistribute that PDF yourself. So that's what's on offer. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you next week. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. My name is Klaatu. You can reach me via email at klaatu@member.fsf.org. You can also usually catch me in IRC as not Klaatu. I'm on the Freenode network. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.